All right, this is exciting daf tonight, daf Mem Aleph, and you're going to see soon why I'm very excited about this daf. Halacha Dalet, Neter Shtayim Kneged Shtayim V'Achas Yetzizonov Harei Zekam. Now, we've had this many times. If you plant two and two and one as a tail, it's a kerem.
Only according to
Rabbi
Shimon.
But the Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. So this is the way we're going to go, I guess, halachically. Now, believe it or not, this is a machlokas, what we've been saying all along, that it's two, two, and one in the middle. That's actually the shita of the Rambam. But if you hold like the Rash, then the next case in the Mishnah is going to tell you that the Rambam's case is possible. Or not possible, does not qualify. It's the next case in the Mishnah, Shtayim Kneged Shtayim, Ba'achas Bein Tayim. So the way he learns it, that's, instead of it going out of the tail, as to say, on that three are on a line, he holds that that's in the middle, which Shtayim Kneged Shtayim, Ba'achas Bein Emtza, Eino Kerem, which would be like like the five, you know, like a dice five.
Like a house roof.
What?
Angle, looks like a house with a roof that goes up like this.
Hmm.
You are very creative.
Very creative. Highly
part of the architecture.
Highly imaginative. Yes, architecture gene. So then, in a kerem, those are not kromim. Ah,
so it's not
yotzei zanav
is the Indian. The Indian is that it has to be in a shura.
Right, so according to the Rash, it has to be three in a row. According to the Rambam, the zonov is in the middle between the two
it's
rows.
Always like that.
And so how is the Rambam going to learn the case of the Mishnah that Be'emsa is not a kerem? The Rambam's going to have to learn that case is what the picture on the right, as you see, he's got a third one in the middle of the row of two. So it's
three and two.
It's a U shape.
Right. So that's the way the Rambam holds that it's no good. But that's a major machlokas, and halachically he says we're passing like the Rash against the Rambam. That's the way the footnotes say. Anyway, very interesting. Okay, next.
Where does it say that?
It would be at the end of footnote 6, right before the 7. It says, the halacha accords with Rash, printed after your day, Derech Emunah 736. Therefore, our elucidation throughout this volume follows Rash's view that a five-vine vineyard consists of a row of three and a row of two. Okay?
The Rash was a Rishon?
Yes, he was. He was born in Bali Tysus. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Tomorrow?
1 second. I just want to do one thing beforehand, which is 11. Now, this is basic.
How does the Rambam argue then?
He just reads it differently.
No, he's not.
Same
level.
Oh, okay.
Same level. Now, the extra statement at the end of the Mishnah, because it's really a repeat. We just said that. Your Mishnah is usually not so wordy. So the question was, why did the Mishnah add those words again? So he says an interesting thing in 11. He says that the Mishnah means to emphasize that the configuration must be precisely as described. It's critical not only that the fifth vine protrude like a tail, but also that the other four be arranged specifically as two facing two. In other words, it has to be a square, but not aligned opposite. So if they're in parallel rows and protruding trail, it doesn't. So in other words, it's like it's a parallelogram, so to speak, right? That's not going to be good. So those pictures that you see on the bottom right there are not going to be good. Okay, next.
So is it an advantage that it shouldn't be a kara?
Yes, it's an advantage.
So you can plant it in a way that's not... What's the advantage of having a carom?
Is there
any advantage? Let's hold off that question for a second. Let's learn the Gemara for a second. Maybe we'll address it, maybe we won't. Let's see what you think about the next piece of Gemara. Rabbi Chiya bar Ba, we're on 41b. Rav Chiya bar Bar B'Shem, Rav Chiya bar Yosef, he says the following. Eretz Kanan L'Gavulo Seho. So I don't have the full pasuk over here. It says over here on the right, on the Torah's R. Tavis Meisov, Mat Lohim, Ki Atem Boim, Elo Eretz Kanan. Zoyis Ha'aretz HaChat Tipu Lohim V'Nachla, Eretz Kanan L'Gavulo Seho. So that's by Midbar L'Amidalad. What? Yes, and then it goes ahead and it explains what the Gvulos are. So the Gvulos are, therefore, is extra and allows us to darshan the word Gvulos Shabodulahem HaKnanim. These are the boundaries that the Canaanites contrive for themselves. This is an amazing, limud. That means the reason why we follow Shtayim Keneged Shtayim V'Zonov is because that's the way the Canaanim had it set up. When we came into Eretz Yisrael, they had planted in that fashion.
We got to learn something from
Goyim? Oh, that's the next question. Then Rabimi pipes up, and you're coming to the next line of the Gemara. Rabimi boy, Rabimi asks, or wondered, Ulamedin min haKnaniim? Are we going to learn halachic definitions of a vineyard from the Canaanites? Take a look at Mara Fulda on this question. Third line, made him an Akananiyim, bit me a Elokein Halacha. So the Marafolda learns that the Gemara is, that he's actually raising an issue, and he's saying, no, that can't be right. We're not going to bring Halachas in based on the way the Canaanites had their vineyards. This must be a Halachic definition, like all the Halachic definitions. It came from Sinai, and that's it. That's one way to learn the Gemara. However, if you take a look in Shabbos, Shabbos Pei Hei, and I looked it up today, I looked at the Gemara, because this is very exciting, I found this very exciting. The Gemara in Shabbos quotes the same, this is a little bit of a tangent, I usually don't do this, but this is worthwhile. The Gemara in Pei Hei says, is talking about, not this halacha of the shape of the vineyard, but the halacha, the Mishnah over there discusses the case that we talked about many times, that within a 6x6 square, you could have five different minim planted, one on each side and one in the middle. And the reason for that was you wanted to have three tefachim between everything, because each min takes up three tefachs. So the Gemara wonders, how did the rabbis know this? Did they have some kind of a Messiah from Har Sinai? The Ritva adds, they certainly did not have any Messiah from Har Sinai, how much a seed takes up. And the Gemara goes ahead to proceed to learn it exactly the way we learn it from here. The Knanim and the Chivim and the Chayrim, the Gemara says that they were experts. The Knanim could smell the ground and say, this ground is good for an olive tree. The Chivis, it says they were like snakes. They could be like a snake that eats the ground. They could taste the ground and know this is good for this min, this is good for that min. Anyway, the Gemara basically says that they were experts, and the Chachamim learned their expertise from them. And that the Gemara is okay with that. So that's what they point out. So in other words, so we could have a machloikas, the way the Marafolda is learning the Gemara. That, let's assume that Rav'imi is the Maskona of the Yerushalmi. That's an assumption. If he's asking a question and he's disagreeing and saying, no, it's halachal mashmi Sinai, that means that the Bavli holds, you could learn something from the Goyim. And the Yerushalmi holds, no, it's got to come from Sinai. That's if you learn that, like Marafoldo is learning, that Rav'imi is asking
that's
a question.
Fundamental
halachic question. That's why I'm spending time on this. Hashkafa, whatever. And one other thing, there's another way to learn. Rosh Cirilo doesn't learn, Lloyd Marafold learns this line. He learns, Tzmiya Ba'almahi. It's Stam. He's Stam wondering. He's not disagreeing. He's saying, how about that? We're learning halacha from the Gaya. In fact, the Gemara in Shabbos learns it from a pasuk. Al-Tasig Gvul Reyacha. That's the Gemara's limud. What's that mean? Because the Goyim were makvid, they didn't want, if I bordered your field, they were careful to make sure not to plant within six tefachim of each other, Because if we were to plant within six tefachim, my plant would be taking the nutrients from your plant, right? Each plant needs three tefachim. So it's a tasik v'reyacha. So that's the, and that Gemara learns a, actually learns a limud from that. So we have a very interesting structure here where you have scientific data or agricultural data coming from outside sources being imported into the din, the core dinim of Hilchos Kalayim. I think that was amazing to me.
The Pasuk says,
the guy. Yeah, I'm sorry, I may have said Re'acha. Maybe it was Rishonim. Maybe I got the wrong word. Yeah. Correct.
It seems like it's more of a question of a Metzius type of thing. And until this point, the Yidden, they were all shepherds. They weren't farmers, basically. At least that's what it seems like.
Okay. It could be.
He said
that the Yidden were all shepherds and not farmers. Okay, it could be.
Before they had computers and accounting.
Yeah. Okay, very good. So this is a very interesting. This is an interesting little point. I figure we spend a little time on it because it's really fundamental. I took out my book from Rabbi Meiselman to Science and Halacha to see if he has anything on it. I'll report back if I find anything. Shmuel Amar b'moidei luchson. Now, the question is, we say, the nafkamina, whether you have a vineyard or not a vineyard, is whether you have to be marked 4 amas, right? So if it's a vineyard, you have to be marked 4 amas. Now, how do you measure the 4 amas? That's the question. In other words, you've got 2 and 2, and you've got 1 sticking out. So now, how do you measure the 4 amas? Especially when I gave the fourth one, the fifth one, how does that work? So Shmuel says you draw a diagonal line from the top of the top right. Let's assume it's 3 on the bottom, 2 on the top left, and you're going to draw a line from the top.
You don't square it off.
You don't square it off. You draw an angle, and then you measure
trapezoid,
and you make your dalan amas circle. It's not a perfect circle. It's a square. But it's not perfectly square. It's a trapezoid. It's the 4 amas. That's why you'll notice he has 2 squares here in the picture. One is a blank square because what he's done is he's expanded out the 4 amas to show you how that would be measured.
So a lot of times, in other cases of halacha, a lot of times we draw a circle around it, whether it's a tchum.
Yes.
We
square it.
We draw a circle, then we make corners on the circle.
Well, yeah.
You don't do a circle at all.
Yeah, it's you're measuring 4 amas from each vine. Okay, so Rabbi Yosi Brazmina b'shem Rabbi Yerkanan at Raya ki'ilu acharis n'tuokan. You look like there's an imaginary sixth vine planted parallel to the fifth, to the zonof. So you square it off, and then, so Mela, obviously, you're square. You have 4 square. Okay, that's the shot at the, this is the shot on the top. There's another mahalach on the bottom, which I highly recommend you do when you have time. Okay, next. Have you a boy? Not a stein connected stein, but achas yotze zonov. So what he's doing here, he's doing two, two, and a tail. But the 2, 2 and a tail, don't think that this means 4. What the way we're learning it now, it's going to be.
It's going to be
an overlap. So in the picture, you have A, B, C, D, E across the top. You have 1, 2 going down the side.
So, just
in case, there's some people on the line that don't have a Gemara. So, you see it? Okay. So what's happening is you have a zone. So if you have a zone of going to the right, and you have a zone of going to the left.
So it's a block of 6 plus 2, right?
It's a block of 6
plus 2.
A block of six vines plus 2 additional vines, right?
Oh, that's really the 6 square. Wasn't it the 6 square? The three and a three, and then the two of the ads are three.
This one?
Yeah.
I count five plus three.
Yes.
So, that's right.
Six. Oh, six in the middle.
And then
yeah,
two
yeah.
on
right.
the side.
Right, right, right. So the two on the side. So you could look at it as if you have a vineyard on the left, a vineyard on the right.
So can you look at it in both ways? In other words, at the same time?
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the question here. So at Roya Kilo Akaras and Tuakan, Akaras and Tuakan. So are you going to look at it? He's asking, I guess, like kind of like according to Shmuel, especially. According to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that there's an imaginary 6-1. So are you going to imagine? When you'd imagine, maybe you only imagine one time, but to imagine two times, maybe you don't imagine so much. Too much imagination, you know? That's his question. I think 7. Does Rabbi Yochanan prescribe envisioning two imaginary vines facing the two tails? Or perhaps he only allows for envisioning one imaginary vine per vineyard? That's the question.
So then you would draw the line like a...
Yeah, on the outside.
Okay, that's a question. Right. Now, let's read the brackets.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Nobody thinks about overlapping?
That doesn't seem to be a problem. Yeah, I don't know why. If Rabbi Yochanan does not allow for envisioning two imaginary vines, then what would happen? Then, in our case, we cannot envision any imaginary vines because there's no basis for favoring one side over the other. The result will be that the work area is measured diagonally. Okay? So what he's saying here is that since according in this situation, you don't know where to put the imaginary vine. It could go on the left, it could go on the right. Since you don't have any reason to put it one place over the other, you've just got to drop it. We had that before, right? Sometimes you go to Chumrah and you say, no, then you have to go to Chumrah. But here you're going to go, I guess, Lakula, in a certain sense. You're going to draw in a diagonal line, like we said before, going to Shmuel. Okay?
So you often would hold that you draw a diagonal line in that case?
On the tzad that you would not imagine two, then you would have to draw a diagonal. Correct? So you would draw a diagonal from A1 to B2, and another diagonal from E1 to D2, and then you'd measure it from there. Okay? Next case. Here you have three vines facing three vines, and an additional vine in a third row opposite the middle vine in the second row. So they've got a nice picture here,
yeah.
Right? One, two, have three vines. And they have on the third line under B, they have a third vine. So at Raya Kila Harris and Tuoktan Lasse's Kerem Gadol, do you view it as if there is another vine on the side of the tail and another one on the other side to render it a large vineyard? In other words, here you're imagining... if you're going to put an imaginary one under A3 and an imaginary one under C3, this gets elevated, it gets escalated, right? Right now, it's remember, when you have two rows and a tail, it's a kerem cotton. When you have three rows of three, that's called a kerem gadol. What's the nafkamina between a kerem cotton and a kerem gadol? No, I'm talking halachically.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. Two. What's the nafkamina? So there's going to be three nafkaminas. Okay? And he speaks them out. Let me show it to you inside. The three nafkaminas.
What is the arrangement you're seeing again? Three versus three and one in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have three, three, and one in the middle.
Yeah.
Question is, would you have two imaginary vines and have it on each position in 3A and 3C?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Right.
Then it would become a large vineyard. Now, second paragraph on the right, under 10. The ramifications of envisioning two imaginary vines, rendering it large, are threefold. A. The forearm or work area south of the arrangement will be measured rectangularly from the imaginary row rather than diagonally. That's poshut. You're not going to draw a diagonal line from 2 to 3. You'll draw a square A through 3 through C3, right? That's poshut. B, as a large vineyard, it's subject to mechol hakerem. Remember your halacha that we learned before. Ein mechol hakerem katan. There's no mechol to a small kerem. Here's where your previous learning has come in so valuable, right? And number C, number third, in a large vineyard, the vines combine with each other to constitute a vineyard, so that even if they're spaced up to 16 amas from each other, which is a halacha we haven't learned yet, we're going to about to learn it, then when you have a large vineyard, you could be 16 amas apart. When you have a small vineyard, it has to be within 8 amas apart. So there's nafkaminas here, whether this is a gadol or a katan, many major nafkaminas, okay? Very good. So the Gemara says, Lochein at Omar ein zonov lekerem gadol. That is to say, so I don't know if you remember this. We said, if you had three rows of three, which is a kerem gadol, and then you had a zonov, so we said, even though when we said we had two in a zonov, we said that the zonov was part of the kerem, and therefore the halakas of dalamas applies to that tail as well. But when you have three, and a zonov, you have a tenth vine, that tenth vine is not considered part of the kerem. It's considered an entity in and of itself, and therefore only has to have a harchaka of how much? Of six tefachim, correct. Why? Because the only time we say this, that you have to be marchik dal and amis is if it's part of a kerem. But since you have a kerem gadol exclusive of that, we said ein zonov le kerem gadol. That was a gemara we had earlier. I'm just repeating it. So the Gemara is repeating this back to you and saying to you like this. If you say to me that you can't have a zonov to a kerem gadol, so then it's using kind of like Yerushalmi logic. It's not necessarily, you know, the way we think. But the Yerushalmi logic is, if it doesn't work, if it's not considered a zonov, it's not considered part of the kerem gadol, then a zonov cannot be used to create a zonov gadol either. That's the logic. Okay? So
it's asking a question on that other picture.
It's telling you an answer to the question. We asked a question. If you have three, and one in the middle, do you look at it as if it's a kerem gadol or not? We're answering the question.
It's not.
Correct. It's not. 11, just to read it inside, the premise that a protruding vine is considered the tail and causes the work area to extend beyond that vine is only going to apply to a small vineyard that contains less than three rows of three vines each. In the case of a large vineyard, any protruding vine is not viewed as part of the vineyard, but as an independent standing outside the vineyard, from which foreign seed must be distanced only six tefachim. The Gemara assumes that since a large vineyard is not subject to the law of a tail, we also, here's the punchline, we also cannot rely on this law to create a large vineyard by adding imaginary vines to the tail. In other words, tails and large do not go hand in hand. Either if you had the large before and now you have a tail, the tail is not part of the large, or in the case of a small and only has a tail, to use the tail dimensions to create a large. It also you don't have. That's the idea here. Does it make sense?
So that's the
Gemara's attempt.
So we don't have an imaginary A3 and C3 and number 9.
That's correct. That's what the Gemara wants to say now. So the Gemara says, no, that's b'shar shehu gadol. That's different. That principle, that ein zonov l'gadol, is you had 9 already, so now you already had an existing gadol. So this outlier is not going to be part of it, and it's considered independent. But where you have this situation here, maybe you would say it. The Gemara feels this is not a valid. And the question is left, of course, unresolved. And now we begin the next halacha. Halacha hey. Hanoteya shura achas v'tok shalom. Person plants one row in his property. And now he's going to do a great thing. He's going to plant another row in his friend's property. I decide I'm going to take advantage. You're not using that property anyway. What do you care? You're in Eretz Yisrael, you know, learning in Kailo. You have this field over here. I'll use this land. Let's say I do it with permission even. It doesn't make a difference. Right? Shur achas b'tok shal chaveiro. He's planting a row. I'm not sure if he's planting it or his friend was planting it. I think it could be both ways, right? I think he talks about it here. Rav Moshe Zakut, if you look at the bottom, it's quoted by the Tosfos Anshei Shem, says that Shur achas b'tok shal chaveiro means there's an existing row of vines in his neighbor's property, which the neighbor had planted. Not that I planted it, my neighbor had planted it. And now I'm going to add another row to my property, so now we'll have two rows next to each other. However, the Mara Fulda understands the mission to mean that I planted one row on my property and one row on my neighbor's property. So there's two ways to look at this case. Okay. Bottom line is,
what's the question of the Mishnah?
So let's see what the problem is. The problem is going to be, does this create a carrot? Okay, now we're going to add another little thing here. Derech Hayochav, Derech Harabim VeEmsa. There's even going to be a private road or a public road between the two rows. The Geder Shehu Namuch Me'asar Tfachim, or you have a fence which is less than 10 tfachim tall. Harei Elu Mitzarfim, they are Mitzarif. That it's considered that we have enough vines for what? For a small carom, for a vineyard, right? So I have three on my side. You have three on your side. That's a small carom. And so you have to be marking Dalit Amis from all around this carom.
It doesn't say what the distance is between the row that you planted and the row that your friend planted.
Okay, don't worry about that detail right now. We're going to get to those details in just a minute. For now, I mean, it could get a little detailed because the Rambam and Pirshei Mishnayos says something very strange. The Rambam and Pirshei Mishnayos on this Mishnah says that this Derech HaRabim is 16 amos wide.
Yeah,
and that's impossible.
Right, because 8 amos.
Because the next Mishnah on this page, further down the page, it says, Amateh Shtei Shuras, Imein Beinehem Shmona Amos, but if you have 8 amos, then you can. And if it was 3, then it says you have 16 amos, you can't be maybe zar. But if you have 16 amos, you can be maybe zar. So even if we're talking about a gadol over here, it wouldn't make sense. The Rambam is saying that even the road is 16 amos. So what's the pshat in the Pirshei Mishnayos, the Meshech Chochmah, the Arsa Man?
Because you can't undo the Rishus Rabbah.
What?
And because you can't undo the Rishus Rabbah of the nature of the street.
Why should it combine?
We're not planting in the Rishus Rabbah. We're saying it's be'emsa. It's between the two rows. Okay? So it's not a question of undoing it. It's there. And the question is, why does the Mishnah say that it's not mafsik? So the Arsa Man says, Chiddush Neira. He says that the fact is that when we say a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim has to be 16 amos wide, that's only when the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim begins and where it ends and majority of it. But it is possible for the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to narrow at a certain point, and it will still be considered Rosh Hashanah Rabbim at the point that it narrows. So maybe that's what the Rambam meant, that there's Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, which, yes, it was 16 amos at one point, but certainly now it's narrow. It's a big chiddush. Okay, but I don't want to get too involved in that. The bottom line is that it doesn't make a difference whether there's a derech hayach, a derech harabim, or a getter, which is nomach me'asar tfachim. It's not mafsik, and the two rows are mistarif. Big chiddush over here, right? If it's gavaya me'asar tfachim, if obviously the fence is greater than 10 tfachim, then eino mitzarif is not going to be mitzarif. If you know I'm there, remember, in Erison Milmala, if there's an intertwining of the vines above the wall, what happens? Harim and Star falls, then they will be Mistarf. The fence only acts as a fence if there is no connection between the two rows. But if they're growing over the fence, then it will not act as a hefsek. There's one detail I want to share with you here. Yeah. This is to remember we taught back on Perek Beis, Mishnah Vav on 18b, we taught that a derech hayachid and derech harabim is a hefsek by grains, remember? But when do we say it's not a hefsek?
Yeah.
By trees. And a karam has a halacha like a tree. What bracha do you make on grapes?
Eight.
Or a priya eights. It has a halacha like a tree. And therefore, the derech hayachid and derech harabim is not a hefsek, as we said before. And we did say also, if you had a getter, which was above 10 tefachim, that it would be a hefsek. Okay, so that's this Mishnah. Big Kiddush. This Mishnah is I found this to be a huge Kiddush. That even though you planted yours, it's your vines and my vines combine, even though they're not the same owner, to create a kerem. I think that's a huge Kiddush. It's not owned by the same person. Why are they mitzdarf? What's the metzias? What's the metzias?
Growing grapes in an area that looks like an orchard. I drive by an orchard.
You're telling me the halacha of karam is halacha marasayin? I never.
Marasayin is a metzias. Is that going to mix or not mix? How can it
mix if you own it? And I own the other one. I think it's a finish. I mean, you don't find that a finish.
Because it's not about bios. It's about agriculture.
It's godo.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. Okay.
It doesn't matter how many people store the stuff in the warehouse. It's a warehouse.
I got it. Okay. I have to think about that, what you're saying. I have to think about that. Rabbi Achi boy. So Rabbi Achi asked the following question. Les hadar pliga al Reb Shimon. Doesn't this Mishnah that says that two people are mitzdarif to each other, doesn't this argue on Reb Shimon? Reb Shimon Amar ain't on a makdash tovah shena shaloi. Reb Shimon says you cannot be makdash something that doesn't belong to you. So he brings I don't know what's going on here. I've got flies all over the place here tonight. What is going on here, Shmuel? Anyway, something's happening here. It says over here, number four, he quotes what the halacha is very important to know what Reb Shimon is. Reb Shimon is quoted very often. You have to know the context of what Reb Shimon they're quoting from. So this Reb Shimon is that if I take my grapevine and I spread my grapevine over your tefuah, that even though there's a halacha of let's say six tefachim, for example. Let's suppose it was just a single individual grapevine. Or even if it was dalanamas, but let's make it simple. Make it six tefachim, one grapevine. And I go ahead and I take my grapevine and I lift it and I put it over your grain. So normally the six tefachim is good as long as you're not lifting it over the grain. If it's over the grain, it's no good. So Rav Shimon says, it doesn't matter, it's not your grain, and therefore, you can't ask something that doesn't belong to you. Okay? That's the context of Rav Shimon.
You mean the question is whether the grain becomes a kalai?
Yes. That's a matter of honor. So Rav Achi argues, in footnote 4, Rav Achi argues, accordingly, in our case, the neighbor's vines, listen to this logic, should not be able to combine with my own vines to forbid outside Zeroyim that one plants in his own property. Similarly, one's own vines should not be able to contribute to prohibiting other seed to be planted in my neighbor's property. In other words, how is it that my neighbor's vine is being mitzdarif with my vine to create a mukam osir? That's what he's saying. Remember, if my neighbor wouldn't have been there, I would have only had my vines, one row on my side, and it would have only been osir six tefachim. Because my neighbor planted his row of vines, now my isser extends out dalet amos. How did something, this is a violation of Rabbi Shimon's premise, ein adam osir davar shena shelo. How did you doing something in your property create an isser for me to plant in my property? He doesn't understand that. That's the question. Okay. So my answer is, Tamon, I'll tell you the difference. Over there, Ain't on a matir stavah shen shaloi. That makes sense. Where I, on my own initiative, put my vine over your wheat. So fashteitzach, you can't aser my wheat. Who told you to put? I didn't allow you to put it there, right? Bram Hocha, but over here, Shalom Shachavir, but Safin, Lesser, Esrim, Tsoi. But here, he and his fellow's vines combined to prohibit in between these vines or within 4 amas of either side of the vine because the idea is that we're both doing it willingly. It's not like someone's coming here and doing something against the other person's will. We're all acting willingly, and therefore they are mitzvahs. That seems to be the answer. Okay. See, you know, just thinking back a minute ago to what we were talking about, we were going at length in what the case is of the Mishnah. So first I said, you know, I planted my vine, my row, and one payer said, and my friend planted his row. That was one shot. Then we saw the second shot was, no, I planted both rows. So if I planted both rows in the Gemara, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. What do you mean, you're the one that planted it there. It's, the Gemara is mashma very much that my friend planted and I planted, that we both planted. So the other shot, it sounds a little shvela to me.
If you planted someone else's property, does that belong to you or does it belong to the other owner?
Oh, so you're going to, okay, I see what you're saying. You're saying that the property, I'm creating an isser on the property of the other guy, how can I create an isser on the property of the other person? That's true. That's true. That's a good shot. Okay. Just something to think about. Now we're on 42a2. Ready to continue over here?
Yes,
Rab Mona lo amar ken. Rab Mona did not say so. He never considered to say that our Mishnah might contradict Rav Shimon's ruling, that one cannot forbid that which is not his, for he understood that in our Mishnah's case, the prohibition is generated by a vineyard belonging partly to each of the neighbors. No. He's arguing. In other words, Rav Mona is arguing. Rav Achi felt that was a good question. Rav Mona felt that's not a good question. Elo lo kein amar Rav Shmuel b'shem Rav Zeira. Rav Achi, I'm not sure why they're quoting all these people. I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, whatever it is, he's saying, did Reb Shmuel not say the following in the name of Reb Zeira? He must have had some other question. Reb Shimon. Now, this Reb Shimon. See, here we're going back to a different Reb Shimon now. See, this Reb Shimon is not the same one that we before we were quoting the Reb Shimon about anyone's Dovah Shem Shalom. Now, if you look at footnote 9, here he says, if you wish to test, remember we talked about testing a to see if the ground is good for a certain type of crop, right? So we allowed you to plant one line, remember? Near the edge of the field, I think. So if you wish to test whether a field is suitable for planting a certain crop, you can plant a single furrow at the end of the field, even when the field is planted with a different kind. He may not, however, plant it in the middle of the field. Right? Then, it said...
It's not chovesh, two people own it.
That's right.
It's not chovesh,
right. So the Tanakam maintains, just as we are forbidden to plant a single furrow in the middle of his own field, he's forbidden to plant it between his own wheat field and his neighbor's wheat field, since the furrow will be closed on both sides. If Shem disagrees... He rules, it's mutter to test with a single furrow at the end of one's field, even when the neighboring field is planted with the same kind. So he does not look at it as chovesh. Okay? So this is the Reb Shimon. Chovesh. To surround it, to enclose it.
So that goes against your theory, because even though it's Marisayim, I don't know that it's owned by two different owners. It's still chovesh. But he says that it's mutter.
Reb Shimon holds his mutter.
Yeah, Reb Shimon holds
but the Tanakama holds his saucers.
But I'm saying if you think...
He holds like a Tanakama.
Right, but I'm saying, but if you think about it, that's the plea, that it's two different people's fields, two different people planted them, and they're mitzaref. This makes a lot more sense than it doesn't.
Uh-huh.
Right?
So let's see what he asks. So Reb Shimon, Kidate, he's consistent with his own opinion. Reb Shimon, Amar, Eina, Maknesh, Dov, Shein, Shalom, In other words, he's mapping them together. Just like if Shimon says, you not can't answer something, so too you can't be choveshet because it's the same. It's the same idea, right? You can't restrict your neighbor from planting a furrow of a different kind. Now, in this case, the restriction would result from the neighbor's crop in conjunction with his own crop, since both together would serve to close in any other kind that might be planted between them. Nevertheless, if Shimon maintains this position, that one cannot prohibit that. It follows that in our Mishnah's case at all, as well, although each neighbor owns part of the vineyard, he would maintain that the shared vineyard cannot forbid foreign seed planted by either one of them. So does the Mishnah not contradict his opinion? That's the question. So it's a similar kind of a question. So Taman, the Gemara answers the same thing there in the case of closing in. And the thvaro is closed in on one side by my crop and one on the other side by my neighbor's crop. So that's why he allows it. But in our case, in our Mishnah, where you have my row of vines in my property and my neighbor, and I have the other second row of vines in my neighbor's property, shalova shalchavero mitztarfin le'esores ha'emtzoi. Here, the vines are combining to forbid the middle. So, what's the pshat? In essence, once the vines attain vineyard status, each and every part of the vineyard has the capacity to forbid the foreign seed, since every part of a vineyard needs farm or work area. So your share of the vineyard prohibits any foreign seed within the work area of your property, and your neighbor's share of the vineyard prohibits foreign seed within his property. So, in other words, the pshat, what he's saying is like this. He's saying it's not the pshat that you're creating an isser on me. We together we have created a vineyard, right? Now that we have a shame kerem, so now there's a halacha of dalet amos from the kerem from whichever side you're on. My side of the kerem, it's my kerem, it's dalet amos or asur on my side of the kerem. Your side is a kerem, and you have dalet amos. It's not the fact I created that isser. Your side of the kerem created the isser. Together we created a kerem. So therefore it's not a violation. You hear the filik? So if you're talking about enclosures, so Reb Shimon Tainis, your wheat field can enclose my test furrow because this is my area. You can't create an isser in my area. Your wheat field would have been interrupting my use of my field. That he doesn't allow.
It's the same thing.
But it's not the same thing, though.
His kerem, his row.
It's only because of his row that we consider it a kerem. Yeah. But the isser stems from my own vines.
Not without.
It wouldn't have had a shame kerem without that. That's true. But that's why it's a step removed.
Yes, that's why it's not a phobish. Right. Because it's half is yours and half is mine.
Right. Okay. That seems to be what we're saying here. Okay, halacha 6. Bottom of 42a2, let's go weiter. Hanoteir shnei shuras in mei b'nei shmona amos. This is a fundamental rule we're going to have. This is nageya. We haven't talked about it too much, but this is a real fundamental rule of how far. So the vines have to be, right? If I make vines, so how far can they be apart to be considered that one is mistarf with the next one? So it depends whether it's a small vineyard or a large vineyard. That's the rule. So if there is an eight amos, then they're mistarev, lo yavizar lo
shom. They're talking about between the two rows. Not in one row.
Between...
Father
and Yeah, he seems to say that. I thought it was also true about the vines. Maybe I'm wrong. Okay, so it says that the two rows can't, the two rows have to be within 8 amas of each other. Okay, we'll learn that way for now. If there were 3 rows, then if there's 16 amas, so it doubles the size, right?
Between row 1 and 3.
Between 1 and chavrata. One row and the other. I think it's 1 and 2, no? I think it's...
He just said it's 8 between 1 and 2.
Only if it's 2 rows, because it's a small karam.
Right.
But if it's 3 rows, it's a large karam, you increase the space to 16.
Because you have a third row.
That, obviously, that can't be the pshat then. It's 16 amas between row 1 and row 2. If row 1 and 2 are within 16 amas of each other, and row 3 and 2 are within 16 amas of each other, they're all mitzarev to make a kerem gadol.
If they're less...
If you only have 2 rows...
No, I'm saying less space. 15 amas between each other, so then it's not a kerem gadol?
No. I'm telling you the outside range. This is the outside range that they can be mitzarev. If they're further apart, the point of this
is...
If they're further apart, then they have no connection, and therefore all we have is individual vines, and it's 6 tefachim, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Does it make sense? Am I saying right or not right?
I'm not so sure.
You're not sure?
Well, you're saying that if it's 15, if it's less space between the rows...
No, I'm saying if we're talking about 3 rows, talking about... Row 1, 8, row 2, 8, and row 3.
No, that's not what
it is. No, that can't be.
No.
That can't be. The Mishnah wouldn't have set it up that way. No, it says if it was 2, it's 8. If it's 3, it's 16. It's doing addition for me? No. That's not sure.
That's the one. And see.
Okay. So look at footnote number 1. Well, on 42B, footnote number 1. While 2 rows are considered unrelated if they were separated by 8 amas, 3 or more rows are considered unrelated only when they are separated by 16 amas. If they're within 16 amas of each other, they're counted together to form a vineyard within which it is completely forbidden to plant foreign seed.
That's what I said.
If you look at the picture on the bottom, you'll see it's talking about 16 amas. Okay, we're going to see it soon. It's what I said. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov, Mishum Chananya ben Chachinoi. He said the following, that afilo chorvohem sois, that even if the middle row, let's say you had 3 row vineyard, and that was, of course, asserted the whole 16 amas between the two. And then the middle row got uprooted, it fell apart, right? It died. So now you're left with only 2 rows, 2 outer rows. They ain't being sure lachavrata. And there aren't 16 amas between one row and the other. Liyavizarasham, you can't bring any zera there. Sheilu mitkilan ta'an, hayamutavishman amas. If you would have originally had been planted, it would have been permitted to introduce foreign seeds within a gap of merely 8 amas between them. Okay, so maybe you are right. Maybe you are right. I'm not 100% sure. But what he's saying here is like this. He's saying that if you have row 1, 2, and 3, you have 16 amas between row 1 and 3. So now, and row number 2 goes ahead and is chorov. So now, if you would have planted it originally that way, that is to say, if you would have only planted 2 rows with 16 amas between them, then the area in the middle you could have planted because it's outside of the range. The 2 rows are not mistarif. But now that you planted 3 rows, so that became a kerem gadol and the whole area in between became otzer. Even though the middle row is chorov, the inside remains otzer because once it became a shem kerem, it retains it even though it was chorov. That's his chumrah. Okay?
The town accountant must argue with that.
I don't know. It could be that he does. I'm not 100% sure. Let me just see something over here if he says it.
If you continue reading in number two.
That's what I'm looking at. The Tanakama, on the other hand, considers the case to be no different than the standard case. Yeah, he holds it that they do argue. You're right. Tanakama does argue. It's no difference than the case number one. A gap of just 8 amas suffices to allow introduction of foreign seed between the rows after distancing 6 tefachim from each vine. What's that? What? According to Tanakama, they're not mitzaref because they're outside of an 8 amah range, and therefore you only have to be marked 6 tefachim from each
vine,
and that's it. The rest of the whole middle will be mutter.
That's what you think, yeah.
Because it's wide enough to be not connected.
That's
either
exactly
side.
What he's saying.
To either side.
That's what he's saying. Okay, very good. Now, Hanotea is karmo sheshes reyal sheshes. If you plant your vineyard at 16 amah intervals, mutter lehe is avizer l'sham. You can introduce foreign seed over there. Three. The rows are 16 amahs apart. They don't combine to form a vineyard. So you can therefore plant foreign seed anywhere between the rows, except between the 6 tefachim adjoining the vines to Yishra, right? Now, he's saying 16 amas between each row over here.
Is this the mark for that halacha?
What?
This is the source of it.
Yeah, this is the headquarters here. So here he says 16 amas
between each row.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Is it not the same case as the previous case?
How is it not the same?
Because the first case you had 3 rows within 16. Here you only have 2 rows.
But according to you, what you told me before, you have no need for any more than an 8 amah gap between row 1 and 2. That's not what he's saying here.
No, that's the different case. In this case, you have 16 between the rows.
I'm asking you a simple question. If you have row 1, and then you go 9 amahs in row 2, another 9 amahs, row 3, what's the rule?
That's the first case that he mentioned.
And you hold everything is six tefachim in that case.
Yeah. Well, it's my focus.
No, don't give me my clothes. According to you, why does it say, this case, that if you do a row 16 amas apart, you can plant in between them? What do you need 16 amas for? All you need is 9 amas. 8.5 amas.
That's only if you have the middle row in there. But this case is no middle row.
When you have A and B, how much space do you need?
You're backtracking. Are you backtracking? Yes, you are.
Yes,
you told me before that there's middle rows here too also.
There's row
after row after row. We just said if a person plants rows,
3 rows,
a whole vineyard full of rows that are 16 amas apart, you can plant between them. That's what it says over here.
In the second case.
This case I just read.
Yeah.
Hanotea. Let's read it again. Hanotea is karmo sheshes rei, al sheshes rei amo, mutu lahavizar losham. That means you have 16 amas between rows.
Right.
So, according to you, what do you need 16 amas between rows for? 8.5 amas is enough. It's not enough. 16 amas, if you have multiple
eight
rows.
Amas is enough. Yeah,
8 amas is enough only for 2 rows, not for 3 rows. That's what I think. I don't know. Let's keep going a little bit further.
Because it has fewer rows, is it more obvious when you have a split between the two? If you have row,
you
row,
don't
row,
have a vineyard in the bottom case. It's not a vineyard.
Okay, let's keep going. Okay. I'm Rabbi Huda. My son is Solomon. There was a story in Solomon, this place called Solomon. What he did was he planted his vineyard 16 amas apart, okay, each row. Now, what his plan was like this. He wanted to have to use the space in between to plant another type of a mint. So let's just assume for the time being that there's a tefach, which is six, an amma, which is six tefachim, on each side of the row of vines that he would six tefachim is an amma. Six tefachim on each side of the vines, and that part he would not plant, of course, because you're not allowed to plant within six tefachim of any vine. Fine. Now he's got a 14 amas of space, of land, and then another amma to the next, that's also because of the next row of vines. Okay, so you got 14 amas of open field that you could plant in. His plan was he's going to alternate the because he doesn't want to use up the minerals, so that's called rotating crop, something like that. So that in order to rotate the crop, what he does is he plants in this crop 1 year, what in space number two, let's say. In space number one, he'll take the vines and turn the leaves and the vines so that they all grow into space number one. Next year, when I'm going to plant space number one, I'll turn the vines to space number two so that the space number one will be open and ponoi and it won't have any coverings. That's basically what he's doing here. That's what that's the maisa. He moved the vines so that they're facing the same direction. And then he would plant the plowed area. The following year, he would turn the branches toward the previous year's area that was planted. And then he would plant the previously uncultivated area. And they came in front of the Chacham, and they said, this is 100% mutter. So in footnote 5, he just says, he relates a story to support the ruling he just stated. Okay? And he says exactly what I just said.
So
okay?
On every other year, he gets rid of the stuff that's in your case, the 14 amas?
Yeah, if you look at the bottom picture, you have area A, area C, area E are all barren areas, right? Then you have the vines. The main thing is to look at the vines. So the row 1, row 2, row 3, those are the vines. So you see the way he has row 2 and row 1 both facing to row A, into area A.
Yeah.
And so now he can go ahead and plant area B. He has row 3 and row 4 facing into area C. So B is available to be planted, and D is available to be planted. That's what would be year number one. Year number two, he would do the opposite. He would have A being planted, B being barren, C being planted, and D being barren. So he would face the vines a different direction, obviously. Okay? Okay. Now, finally, Reb Shimon, Reb Meir, Omrim, and they argue on everything. It's like, you know, after doing all this learning, you know, you come up with Reb Shimon and Reb Meir, they argue on everything. The whole thing. Even if you plant three or more rows, it's still only eight amas that's usher. If it's more than eight amas, then not mitzdarif. So even in a kerem gadol, kerem katan, kerem gadol, they all have the same shear, eight amas across. It's universal. And I saw it says that we paskin like that. Yeah. I was surprised. Okay, I haven't learned it yet inside, but this is where we'll stop. Okay? Is that okay, guys? Well, that's just about an hour, not too much more. This was Daf Mem Aleph and Mem Beis.